And now, from the Green 960 studios in San Francisco, this is an organic conversation with Helga Hellberg and Mark Mulcahy.
And welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, ecology, stories from the land, relationships, and life itself. We're your hosts, Helga Hellberg.
And Mark Mulcahy.
And Mark, it's Mother's Day
weekend, yes. Yeah, tomorrow.
How lovely. Aw.
Yeah. And you know, the great thing about it is that people have been celebrating mothers since the beginning of time. I mean, the Greeks, the Romans, there's throughout history, they had mothering days. You know, initially it was deities of mothering that they were celebrating. But even as far back as the 1600s in England, they actually declared a day for people to spend with their moms and even gave the servants time off at that point in time to go spend it with their families.
Sweet. And yes, we sometimes say on this show that soil and womb being one, there's mothers and then there's Mother Earth, and it's really the two life-giving forces. Mothers, of course, all about nourishment and feeding us, just like the earth. So thanks to all mothers in all shapes and forms and sizes. How will you celebrate it?
I'm deciding that right now. I usually know by now. Most likely I'll be visiting my mom. But I'm deciding that right now.
Yes. Thanks for putting you on the spot.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
And well, my physical mom is in, although I guess we all have many physical moms, but my blood-related mom is in Germany. Shout out to her. And, you know, it's really about nourishment in so many forms. I remember when I go back to Germany, I wrote a blog a year ago. I call it 8 pounds of love. I always gain weight. Like, you know, I sometimes go there for a week and I come back 7, 8, 10 pounds heavier than before, because the moment I land, I get fed. And I always had a hard time with that. But instead of, you know, 8 pounds of weight gain, I'm now calling it 8 pounds of love gain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's really what moms do. It's just, you know, your perspective.
And what about that goose fat that goes on your chest?
No, that's a different show. Yeah.
It is very true, though. It is a sign of love. And mother's love is unconditional, right?
Yes.
No matter what, your mom is always going to love you.
Yes. And thank you. Thank God for that. So a shout out to all moms of all shapes and sizes. Wonderful. Thank you for everything you do every single day. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today it is about celebrating Mother's Day. We're excited about our guests today, two women who know a thing or two about mothering and nourishment and nourishing the next generation. More on that when we come back right after the break. Stay tuned. And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today's show is about Mother's Day, mothering and nourishment. With us now, calling from Marietta, Georgia, is Agatha Achindu, the CEO and CYO of Yummy Spoonfuls, one of the leading baby food companies that are actually started by a woman. Welcome to the show, Agatha. Are you there? Can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Thank you for having me.
Thanks
Thank you.
For being
Hi,
part
guys.
Of it.
Yeah. Welcome.
Good morning.
So, Agatha, Yummy Spoonfuls. You know, I heard that name and I couldn't help but smile. What a great name. Can you tell us the story behind the name and your company?
the name, it's one of those accidental things that happened. Like, we had a different name. We'd been doing this for a couple of months, and we had a name that wasn't trademarked. And when we finally went to trademark that particular name, we realized it was taken like 6 weeks before we tried to trademark it. So I'm sitting with my girlfriend. I'm like, what do we do? And I think I was eating something, and I looked at the spoon. I'm like, yummy spoonfuls. And she went, oh, yeah, what a great name. So that's how we actually ended up with Yummy Spoonfuls.
So give us a little that's great. And so tell us a little story about how the company got started and how you're, you know, I'm sure you didn't set out to be a baby food maker.
No, I actually got cornered into making baby food.
And yeah, people made you.
I grew up just coming from a different part of the world. When I got here, I knew there was really something wrong with the food, just because I grew up on, you know, farm-to-table system. And then in the early 90s, when I came here, I saw jarred canned food, and it was a cultural shock for me, having tasted real food and then trying to eat food that wasn't so fresh. So from then, I just started making. I would change recipes for my friends. If they like something that's in a can, I'll show them how to make it fresh. And when I had my son, I started making his food, and it just became a small movement that grew to 300 moms that I was teaching. I was in corporate America in IT, but just teaching moms how to make healthy, wholesome food, showing them how easy it is, and trying to shift that mindset of, oh, organic doesn't taste so good. You know, and then they would always come back. We would have little workshops that I would cook, and then we share the food. And they would come back to me like, oh, I made it at home. My baby didn't like it. Can you just make it?
Yeah, that's the problem sometimes.
That's really, really the premise of Yummy Spoonfuls.
So you started the company what year?
2006.
And really out of the necessity that nobody seemed to be able to follow the recipe or cook something as yummy as you could, right? Really doing it as a favor for friends in the beginning, and then start making it a real company. What was the moment where you thought, okay, this is so much work, I actually maybe down the road should get paid for it? When did you decide? What was the moment to make it actually your livelihood?
I actually think when we got 300 moms that I was just helping with not being paid, just really helping them. And, you know, one night I was sitting down, I'm just like, you know what, I could really make money from this, because every time I talk to a mom, explain to them that jar baby food has a 2-year shelf life. It's like a lightning bulb. And, you know, they have this look of denial that there is no way baby food can have a 2-year shelf life.
Yes.
So I'm just like, well, if I can reach moms to really educate them that the food, having food in this store doesn't just mean it's good for your baby, and really talk to them about the importance of organic. You know, I come from a third world country, and this is America that we have. There is opportunities are out there. Your baby shouldn't be eating anything that has the slightest potential to hurt them, to harm them in any way. So I looked at it from the point where, well, I can educate and I can make money doing it.
Yes, and well, baby food on the shelf has a 2-year shelf life often, and obviously that it is working, but it has a consequence and a reason, right? Why a food, any food actually, can have a shelf life of 1 or 2 years. There's this great story that Michael Pollan sometimes shares of the diner that found a piece of, what was it, cheesecake behind the fridge that was literally 17 years old and perfectly fine to eat.
Oh, yes.
I mean, from the appearance, at least.
That's the scariest thing. It's just because it's a mindset. I don't know if I want to say it's a mindset or just a cultural thing. People tend to gravitate towards what they know. But the moment you start educating them a little bit, like, you know, this food, for it to be able to stay this long means almost everything is dead. And that peas, it doesn't matter whether it's baby peas, if it's cooked properly and if it's if everything in it hasn't been killed, should be green. It shouldn't be a brownish, dusty color. You know, there is just, it's weird how we play with food.
Yes.
in America.
You know, I was looking at your website and looking at your products, and you talk about making every bite count. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
As a mom, one thing that was really important to me was just don't feed kids things. Their tummies are so tiny. Look for nutrient-dense food, and don't just give food as if it's a game. Treat food like you treat medicine. If you're giving your baby whatever it is that you want to feed your baby, you can look at it and ask, what role, what nutritional role is this particular thing going to play? If it's just something that's loaded with sugar, M&Ms, and your baby is a year old, you shouldn't. You look for things like brown rice. Brown rice has, you know, it's whole grain, so it's fiber, it's protein. So even though it's just one thing, it's already plain. You know, it's like you're feeding with an efficiency. It fits different blocks.
And it's a matter of making your, you know, if you're making every bite count, that would make your calories and your nutrients and just everything would make a difference when you were making those choices for your child.
Yes.
Well, you bring everything in focus, right, really. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today we're talking about baby food on Mother's Day, the nourishing aspect of being a mother. Calling in from Marietta, Georgia, is Agatha Achindu, the CEO and CYO of Yummy Spoonfuls. And CYO, Agatha, stands for Chief Yummy Officer, which brings me to your recipes. How did you learn how to cook what you're cooking? I know you're a mom yourself, but where did you grow up, and what's the role of you know, pure, direct ingredients, healthy, simple?
I grew up in a couple of places, but my last stop before the United States was Halifax in Canada. But I grew up with a mom. My mom believes strictly on food. Treat food like your medicine. If you have a headache, the first question, even today at my age, when I'm talking to her on the phone, and I'm like, oh, my head hurts, the first question is, what did you eat? Everything that happens relates directly to what you eat. That's how I grew up. So food has to be really pure. We made everything from bread, raw milk. Everything was made at home. Or we go to the local farm. I never had any processed food. The first thing I had, I think I was 21 in Maryland, when I got whole wheat bread. And I was looking at it. I'm like, there is no way this is whole wheat bread, because the texture was different, even the color. And when I tested it, I'm just like, you know, this is completely crazy. But when I grew up, food was something that you take time, because it goes into your body. So every effort we had was put towards the food. And I started cooking when I was 9 years old. I love to cook. And I would come up with recipes. My friend, who happens to be my next door neighbor, is a pediatric nutritionist. So we would come up with different recipes. And when I look at food, talking about, you know, feeding with an intention, I think about all the nutrients that I want, and then I look for the food that has the highest qualities of those nutrients that I want in the food, and then we put it together. That's why some of our recipes are, you know, we have adzuki beans and sweet potato, apricot and brown rice, quinoa and papaya, you know, the things that you won't see in your regular baby food.
And Agatha, listening to the list that you're that you're naming off there. I remember making baby food myself for my daughters and putting sweet potato into a grinder and feeding them. And it was just all very simple foods. And would you say that how you, the food you start your baby with will make a difference in how they eat the rest of their lives?
Oh, yes. Yes. It makes all the difference. We talk every day. I still do workshops, a ton of workshops. And I really try to make parents understand the direct connection between the food that they feed and the direct result they get, and how they can train babies from the very first spoonful. Because the babies we're feeding today is that adult 20 years from today. It's feeding like everything else you learn, then it becomes a habit. We just think about it. We have all type of books about how to sneak in veggies. Like it's something hideous. You know, but I have a six-year-old. Seriously, I have a six-year-old, and I kid you not, this is no joke. People, because I have an accent, people always assume that my kids are from someplace else, because they're like, oh, American kids don't eat veggies like that. It's because you guys are from Africa. And I'm like, well, my kids have never left. They were born here.
Yeah,
never left Georgia.
Yes, they were born here. I mean, they've traveled all over the world, but they were born right here. So they are just like your kids. They were just trained, you know, to eat right.
So fast forward from the from 2006, you made the decision that night. You had 300 women that you were, you know, trying to help educate around the food choices for their kids and how to make yummy food. And then you decided to basically turn your life upside down, right? You cashed in your retirement account, your savings, everything, and started this company. Where is Yummy Spoonfuls today? Like, are you nationally distributed, or where can people find you?
We are in Whole Foods, and we've just gotten into the Whole Foods all the Whole Foods in the Southeast. We are in Dean and DeLuca. You can also get our products through Amazon. And on our website, we do have a list, but we're nationwide. We are. It's a bit tricky just because.
It's so fresh, right?
I still wear the cap. I still wear that hat of not just a mom. It's a mom who knows too much. So it's not. I don't just want to make food, any type of food, because I want to make money. I want to make my food has a purpose. It needs to change. If the only thing at the end of the day that Yummy Spoonful does in America is really to change the way food is made for babies. Because right now, we have the food that babies eat are the worst food. Because babies, with their delicate system that's developing, they shouldn't be eating old food. They shouldn't eat two-year-old food. Baby food shouldn't be on the shelves. It should be refrigerated or in the freezer. Food is something perishable, especially for babies.
And you're the chief yummy officer, meaning you're still cooking yourself every day, right?
Not every day, but yes, I'm still cooking. I am still cooking. This is what I love to do. And you want me to tell you something really funny?
Yes.
I still teach moms how to make food.
Yes, and we want to dive into some recipes and some things you can share of how our listeners can incorporate what you do, your wisdom, into their daily work of feeding their children. We are speaking with Agatha Achindu, the CEO and CYO of Yummy Spoonfuls, one of the leading baby food companies in the United States, making fresh, healthy, wholesome, organic baby food that was actually started by a woman and by a mom. Agatha, please stay on the phone with us. We're taking a quick break. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
My name is Earl Herrick, and I am the owner of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco Bay Area distributor fully committed to organic produce. From the time one could find organic fruits and vegetables only in natural food stores to now, when schools and fine restaurants feature organic, we have been forging relationships with growers for over 20 years. If you want to offer the finest organic produce to your employees or customers, find us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to Sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Do you feel run down, stressed, overweight, or overloaded? Urban Remedy is a delicious 100% organic juice cleansing program designed to jumpstart your body's natural healing and cleansing abilities. This delicious juice feast, created by leading acupuncturist Nika Pasquale, is rich in vital nutrients, minerals, and enzymes, providing you with all the nutritional nourishment you need to thrive. Delivered directly to your doorstep. Urban Remedy, a convenient way to boost your energy and balance your body. Place your order today at urbanremedy.com. That's urbanremedy.com.
And we are back here to an organic conversation on this beautiful Mother's Day weekend. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we are celebrating mothers and the art and love of nourishment. Calling in from Marietta in Georgia is the CEO and founder and CYO, Chief Yummy Officer of Yummy Spoonfuls, Agatha Chindu, who started the company in 2006 out of really a necessity to provide healthy nourishment for babies.
And for 300 of her friends.
Yes.
She was feeding the whole community.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, how big is Marietta, Georgia?
In my church, we have 4,000 members. So just think, you have three co-workers who tell three of their friends, and then
sure.
So that's mothers.
10% of the entire population was here.
you already had a built-in company just waiting for you.
Yes.
Yes.
So what can you tell us now that you've been on this journey? It's been 5 years now. Your company's been launched. You're successful. You're one of the number one baby foods in the country, and so what have you gotten out of this journey? What has it done for you?
I think the most important thing is that I now know for a fact that people do better when they know better. I used to be so frustrated. I would go to the market and then see something. I'm just like, I cannot believe people are buying this. You know, but I was in my corner. But now I know, not everybody grew up like I did. Not everybody knows what an organic carrot tastes like. That an organic carrot really tastes better than anything processed. So that is the biggest thing for me. That people, we take it for granted that people know. They don't.
Yeah, and the power of education is definitely
yes.
transformational.
Yes.
That's great. Mark, you mentioned that you were cooking for your kids, for your daughters when you were younger. I'm sure there are things you can share, and you have some tips and tricks too. But Agatha, what are some of your your most protected secrets that you can share with us? Like, what questions come always up and that are so easy to answer, of like hands-on practical, how to do it, what not to do when it comes to baby food? You're still teaching parents right now, right, currently?
Yes. I actually had a workshop not too long ago at the Atlanta Children's Museum, and we made organic sweet potato pancakes.
Wow.
Because the big thing, a lot of times, a lot of our moms will be, well, my baby used to eat healthy. Now I have a toddler. What do I feed them? Oh, organic food doesn't taste good. That's why my kids will eat the junk. So I try to make some of those things, like popsicle,
sure.
Pancakes, waffles, some of this mainstream food that, you know.
But not out of white, not out of white flour, but in this case, out of sweet potato.
And we didn't even have a need. It was funny because they're like, oh, nobody's going to eat because they didn't see any sugar. But we use sweet potato, which didn't only add moisture into the whole wheat, add the sweetness. I mean, these kids couldn't get enough, not to talk about the parents, too. They right. couldn't get enough of this. So the number one thing that I try to really drill down to parents, believe it or not, as crazy as you think your cooking is better than any two-year-old food that's on the shelf.
Right. Yes.
So just go to your local farmer's market, especially this time of the year. There are farmer's market all over the place.
But how can people, like, if they go to a farmer's market, what's the guiding principle, or what are the guiding principles to know what toddlers like, how to mush it up, what oils to use or not, how many spices or not, like how, or do you use any?
For the first foods, like if your baby is 4 months and you're starting solid, I would say it really just food that doesn't have high allergenic tendencies, and then make sure that there are no flavors. Just in case there is a reaction, you can easily pinpoint. So the first 3 months should be, say you want spinach, it should be spinach by itself for 2-3 days. It just make the spinach, make butternut squash, make single ingredient stuff. Don't add any spices to it. So if your child reacts to it, then you know for sure. You don't have to start thinking, well, let me test them for this and test them. You know, oh, well, my child is reacting to the spinach. And then after the first couple of months that you've gone through, it might be 30 different meals, uh-huh. 30 different items. You can start mixing. Because now, say your child has already had spinach and they've had butternut squash, and then you make a meal with spinach and butternut squash, and then in that meal you add coconut oil, and there is a reaction. Automatically, you know that the reaction is coming from the coconut.
And when you say reaction, like food sensitivity?
Yes, any type of allergic reaction, anything.
Like a rash or whatever.
Like
may
a rash.
Up,
yeah, it could be something up. In the, you
sure.
know.
Yeah.
Yes, and then, you know. But I tell people things like the starches, the squashes, you bake them because then it makes it nutrient dense. I like to steam food. I bake a lot, and I use very little water. So if they are making veggies, buy a steaming basket. Because so the food, I mean, it's all about making this tasty and then very nutrient dense.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just boil your peas in a big ton of water. It dilutes the taste a little.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so those are the little things. And then, you know, puree it very finely when your baby is very young, and then try, and you can play with it. Your baby will walk you through some of these steps, because if it's too chunky, the baby won't eat it. If it's, you know, just try different things, but don't be scared of your pot.
Yeah, look for the signs.
Mm.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
and mm-hmm. then just look for the signs. And even, I say this even for parents who don't have the time to cook, and you are buying, say you're even buying my food, come to my Facebook page. Every week there is a new recipe that we put, sometimes twice a week, sometimes once, but we can't make all the food. We have 25. When you go to the farmer's market, you can find in any given day, it might be 100 different veggies or grains that you can make, add to what you're already buying. you know, even if it's once a week, you can make a porridge for your baby, because while you're home, you have time. And then the rest of the week, you buy the food. But your baby would love it, and you would feel good just knowing that, you know, this is something that you made really fresh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So what's next for Yummy Spoonfuls?
We are working, we're actually working with KEHI to get, you know, national distribution, and so we can get into California, because we get a lot of orders there. That's one thing we're working on. And then we're working on some little kids, like kids' lunches. That's one thing that we want to do. So for parents, like I have a six-year-old now, and it's just such a challenge. I make everything. I make his snack for school. I make his lunch. And so we're trying to put something like that for parents so they can pre-order for the week and just have fresh, real, local-grown food.
And that is always found in the refrigerated area, right? Or even
yes.
Frozen?
Yes.
Never just on the shelf.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. I would not feed my son food. I so believe is perishable. Even bread, I would not buy. I'm looking at bread, and I actually did a workshop on this, really telling people how many ingredients it's needed to make a loaf of bread. And so when you're looking at bread with 20 different ingredients, you know, 5 to 6 of them are the essentials. And the rest is just to preserve the bread for 3 months, 4 months, 5 months.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. We really appreciate having you on and all your insight that you've shared.
And again, what's that Facebook page where you have weekly recipes that people can read up on?
It's Yummy Spoonfuls. YUMMYSPOONFULS. Or they can go to our website, which is www.yummyspoonfuls.com, and click on our Facebook page or our blog. We do a lot of recipes. And if you're trying to make food for your child, honestly, you can call us. I will be more than happy to walk you through that process. Our kids really, really deserve to eat real food and fresh food.
Very sweet.
Organic food.
Thank you. Again, that's yummyspoonfuls.com. Great website. You can also go to An Organic Conversation and on Facebook and find all the links and resources there on how to get to Yummy Spoonfuls. Thanks again, Agatha Chindu, for being on the call today. Pleasure to have you, and good luck with your company. Wonderful service you're doing there.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really had a good time. Thank you, guys.
Thank Bye-bye. You. Agatha Chindu, the founder and CEO of Yummy Spoonfuls, one of the healthiest baby food companies, and started by a mom herself. Good for her, good for us. We are celebrating Mother's Day today, the beauty and art of nourishment. And we're excited about our next guest, Peggy O'Mara, the editor and owner of Mothering Magazine, calling in from Santa Fe, New Mexico. Peggy, are you with us?
I am with you, Mark. Hello.
I'm Helga, actually.
Oh, you're Helga.
I'm Helga, yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought it was Helga and Mark. Sorry.
Yes. Quite all right.
Helga
quite
and Mark. Thank you for joining us, Peggy. Mark wouldn't stop talking about you.
Oh, nice.
For the last 3 months about since we have planned the show. Because when he was a young father, and they were basically camping out to save money on the on the monthly budget, the one thing they did not get rid of was your magazine.
Oh, so, thank you so much. Thanks, Mark.
The value is beyond you've ever known.
Didn't use it for kindling for the fire or anything.
I'm not sure, but yeah.
Actually, Peggy, I'm going to tell you that we saved those magazines, and each time a friend of ours, another young mother, would get pregnant, we would pass those down, and
they thought
those were the, so you may have lost a couple of subscriptions there, but they thought those, that was the greatest gift we could have given them, all those issues of Mothering Magazine. So
people are actually selling them on eBay now.
Yeah on the black market. Yes.
And here we gave them away.
Exactly right.
Yes. So, Peggy, I just want to, so first of all, acknowledge that for over the last 25 years, you've been a voice for people who intuitively knew what to do with their kids, but really didn't have a source, at least back then, feel comfortable with their decisions. And how has the magazine evolved in the last 25 years? And where did that journey start for you to feel like you could put a magazine like this out?
Yeah, what made you start a magazine? What was your intention when you, or your insight there when you started it?
It's commonly thought that I actually started mothering, but I didn't. I bought it when it was just a few years old, just actually took it over. A woman named Addie Evanson started it in Southern Colorado. And like myself, she was, we were back to the landers, people, hippies who were disillusioned by the Vietnam War and wanted to lead a simple life and kind of just figure things out ourselves. So a lot of people in that generation in the early 70s went back to the land, is what it's called now. I mean, we didn't know it was called that exactly then, but it's been called that now, and, started communes and different things. So really the desire to lead, a self-sufficient life. And I saw the magazine early on when I was a young mom, probably around, it was started in 1976. So I started it, I saw it about 1978 and sent an article, a poem. Addie loved my work. We were very compatible philosophically. And eventually she just didn't really want to do the business and kind of passed it on to me and my former husband. And so, I mean, I never would have had the courage to think I could start a magazine. When I saw it, I thought, wow, I wish I could do this. I wish I had done this. And I think my strength in those days was that I was an early reader of the magazine. But the impetus, I think, in terms of just wanting to share this message with parents came from, my own exploration as a parent. I wanted to do things differently than the way I was raised. I knew intellectually that there was something better. I didn't quite know how to do that emotionally. And I needed a lot of support, So look, I created this huge support network for myself, was able to read all these articles, all these stories, of different parents and different parents' experiences, and really knew from my own experience that I could trust myself. And I wanted to give that message to other parents and really, I think, emphasize that whole idea of informed consent that, 20 years from now, you have a baby, and 20 years from now, you're not going to remember the name of the various people who gave you all this unwanted advice, but you're going to be responsible to that child. And so making those decisions, getting the most information you can, then making the right decision for you is really what I wanted for parents. I really, that's what I wanted for myself, and that's what I wanted to share with others.
Wonderful. And yes, you are a mom of, four grown kids now.
God, they're so old now. I'm forgetting their ages.
Sorry.
That's so important. No, they're in their 20s and 30s. And I said to my daughter the other day, I said, well, honey, aren't you like 35? She said, no, I'm 37, Mom. Wow, I cannot.
That happen? 2 years.
Yeah, how'd that happen?
What happened to those 2 years?
Now I know how my mom must feel when I tell her I'm 55.
I just say I'm in my threes. I say they're in their threes. Or you can say I'm in my fives.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Somewhere in that
decade. Back in my fives. So, Peggy, in your magazine, you cover everything from breastfeeding to imagination to talking to kids about death. I mean, you name it. It's such a wonderful resource for parents. And one of the things that I really like about the magazine is it also talks about how to feed your children. And today's topic is about feeding our children.
We even have a section called Peggy's Kitchen, and we have a really active website as well that has a lot of good food articles and information about that.
Yeah, there's actually a recent article called Reality Check, One Tired Mom Responds about. And so can you tell us some of your favorite ideas? I mean, you've been doing this for a long time. You've raised your own kids for if someone was interested in maybe trying some new ideas of doing their own baby food or got any tips for us?
I think it's so simple, really. I mean, it's so many things in parenting seem so complex because there's so many products out there for you to choose from. But feeding your baby it's just so simple. For me, I just kept it real simple in that I waited till my babies, again, I think as Agatha was saying, I didn't hear all of her comments, but kind of looking for those signs. And I didn't, you know, I looked for like at around 6 months is kind of when I started to think about that. And I introduced one food at a time, and I started with fruits. And at that time, I lived on a little farm, so I had some of the, I was growing some of my own fruits, so I could, you know, cook that up, mash that into a little applesauce. So I started with fruits and then one at a time and kind of would just watch, was there any reaction, just to make sure there weren't any allergies going on, you know. And then did the vegetables one at a time. And then once I felt like my kids were kind of introduced to the foods, then I would just more incorporate what we were having in a meal. And you can get these very cool baby food grinders. They're very simple, easy to clean. You can just have them at tableside, and you can just take something that you're having and grind it up into, you know, kind of just mush and feed it to your baby. And that way it doesn't become this, like, I have to go buy a lot of stuff and I have to, you know, have one food for my kids and one food for me. I think using that baby food grinder, doing the one thing at a time and just adding foods, again, at the table as the child gets a little bit older, is just kind of the simplest way to do it.
Yeah, and most people think, or maybe I'm the only one.
You're the only one.
Up until now thought that, you know, kids or babies need Monday, you know, X meal and Tuesday Y meal. And that's just not really true, right? You can have a basic staple ingredient way, base where you add things throughout the week to it. I remember there's a study when I studied holistic nutrition in England where a dozen kids were exposed to, I think, 40 or 50 different foods laid out for them. And they were crawling around, toddlers, and they were eating bananas for 7, 8, 9, 10 days straight until they one day dropped the bananas and went onto another food. So their nutritional needs and profile requirements are so different than, it's not like Monday is meatloaf and Tuesday is fish and Wednesday is, you know, the legume soup.
It's, they don't need a menu.
Much, no, that's what I'm saying. It's actually much simpler.
I'm glad you brought up that study. I mean, and they're developing their digestive system, so they don't need to be overwhelmed with complex dishes or, I think, grains.
Daily changes, yes.
Yeah, just let it go slowly. And then, you know, then there's also the philosophy that says, gosh, just bring them into your world, you know, let them eat what you're eating. And don't make it so precious, you know, just make it kind of part of life. And I think that's also good advice.
Yeah, that overwhelming of nutrients right from the get-go because we don't want them to starve. That's actually not the case.
And you're right. And they're going to, they have their own appetites. I think you're talking about that same study where it showed that over time, the kids just kind of regulated their own nutrition.
Right, a perfect balanced diet, but it took them 3 months.
And I remember that with one of my kids where he just, my goodness, that's all he would eat. We're bananas for a while.
You would get worried. And then,
fine. And then I think the other thing to remember is, again, if a mom is breastfeeding, that breastfeeding is really the superior food. And so when you're weaning to solids, it's not like you're weaning to a better food. You want to still continue so that, you know, to go slowly so the baby really will choose breast milk as their first food. In those early months, you know.
Great. Peggy, please stay tuned on the call with us. We're taking a quick break. Peggy O'Mara, the editor and owner of Mothering Magazine, joining us from Santa Fe, New Mexico, on our show today about Mother's Day and nurturing and how to feed babies. Stay tuned. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back.
To try and please me, you never let me down before. Don't imagine you're too familiar.
Frye Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Frye never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Frye organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Frye Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites, available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Hi, my name is Earl Herrick. I started Earl's Organic Produce over 20 years ago to bring the best certified organic produce to the San Francisco Bay Area. Still today, Earl's Organic Produce is sourcing only organic fruits and vegetables. Our core principle is healthy relationships with growers, the environment, and the clients we serve. If you are a business interested in offering the most delicious organic produce to your customers, please visit us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to Sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Marin Organic is an association of organic producers in Marin County, California, which has become one of the most progressive voices in the sustainable food movement in the United States. Through its many innovative initiatives, such as a school lunch and gleaning program, Marin Organic is creating a healthy, sustainable, and safe environment for all beings, today and for generations to come. Please become a partner in our work by visiting marinorganic.org and by pledging your support now. Thank you.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we are celebrating Mother's today on this Mother's Day weekend. The art and love of nourishment and feeding our next generation, so to say. We're talking about baby food. With us on the phone is still Peggy O'Mara, the editor and owner of Mothering Magazine, calling in from Santa Fe, New Mexico. Peggy, you mentioned before the break the importance of breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. And for me, as a nutritionist, that kind of rings the bell of whatever the mothers eat will be in their mother's milk.
Totally.
Can you talk about that? And can you specifically address the issue of brother milk contamination? That we're reading so much about, unfortunately, that environmental toxins are often passed through the mother's milk to the infant. How can women avoid that, or what would you recommend to how to deal with it best?
That's a confusing issue because you hear about it and you get really scared about breast milk. But in fact, what it is that breast milk is used to test the environmental contaminants in the environment or the contaminants in the environment. So if the contaminants are in breast milk, they're in everything else. So it's not an alternative to think, oh, I'll have formula because the contaminants are in the formula, plus it's the milk of another species. So I think what the point of the Environmental Working Group and the groups that are analyzing the breast milk is to really get us to raise our standards in the United States about some of these pesticides and toxins in the environment, and then to be able to track our progress and say, okay, here we were at this level, and now we've done these things, and now we've improved our environment. That's what has been done internationally and in other countries. So,
It was kind of portrayed as, you know, hence mother's milk is not a safe form of nourishment. It's really important to dispel that myth.
It's very important to dispel that myth, and it's just not the case. And really, again, it's just an indictment of our environment, which we all need to, you know, help change, and I think we are, you know, trying to do that.
So even if
our working group's doing a good job on that,
you would not confirm that even that there's a concentration of environmental toxins possible through absorption in the human body and then being passed on through mother's milk. You don't think
I've never seen any evidence of that. You know, I've done some workshops on this with people from the Environmental Working Group and from the Natural Resources Defense Council.
Yes.
A doctor there and a researcher over at AWG. And, you know, we've talked about this to groups and even talked to La Leche League, which is the breastfeeding advocacy group, about, you know, they didn't know how to deal with that information and how to reassure people. So, I think that the benefits of breast milk so far outweigh anything else that and that anything that would compare in terms of infant feeding would be inferior to breast milk.
And then there's, you know, as your magazine always kind of gives the framework of confirmation for, we kind of know, right, deep down,
sure.
We always know that there's an element of mother's milk that I don't think even has been tested or understood yet of the direct transfer of that nourishment from the mom to the baby, even if you pump it. But there's something that is human made that extends the the form of nourishment after the technical cord has been cut, that, you know, keeps connecting the mom and the baby, of course.
And I think, you know, one of the things that people don't realize about breast milk is what it does, and all the studies that, you know, confirm what we know intuitively about breast milk. What breast milk does is it's like a human substance. It's like blood. So really, by giving a baby breast milk, it's like their gut stays sterile. It stays, a sterile environment can't have any germs in it. So as long as the baby is breastfed, the baby is more likely than to not have disease because of the sterile gut that is created by that exclusive breastfeeding. So it's kind of hard to, you know, we know breast milk is good, but to talk about how it actually works in the body and that it is a physiological substance is kind of mind-blowing, and that we even, it always makes me laugh that we actually would have to have studies to convince us that the milk of our own species is better for us, right? Like, I think, oh, let me do 1,000, and there are 10,000 studies to tell us, oh, okay, I think
it's better to eat, to drink cow's milk.
And we don't even call it milk. You know, we call, what do we say? When we say milk, we mean cow's milk, right?
Yeah.
We have to call breast milk breast milk. That's what should be called milk. And the other stuff should be differentiated as cow's milk, soy milk, whatever it is. But it's funny.
Is funny. And once again, I just want to say thank you for that. That's the perfect story right there, because when you're a parent, you want to do everything right.
Yeah. And you just
sometimes you don't trust your own instinct, and the magazine was one of those things that just provided a little support in those areas where we just wanted to trust our instinct. And so thank you again.
You're welcome.
Peggy, what can you tell us, you know, on this journey of 25 years, what some of the more joyful experiences that you've had from having put out Mothering Magazine, either with your own kids or with other mothers, or, you know, can you relate any stories along that line?
Well, you know, I think obviously just connecting to the other moms and hearing the stories and getting the support that gave me as well. And knowing that many times I could really help make a difference in somebody's life, sometimes even saves a life. You know, I remember years ago in the very, very early days of the magazine, I got it was only handwritten letters in those days, really, but a handwritten letter from a mom who was really concerned because her baby's behavior was indicating that something was off, but she didn't really kind of trust the medical establishment, so she didn't trust the advice she was getting, and when she described the situation, I said, I think maybe you really do have, your baby really does have a B12 deficiency. I think maybe she was a vegetarian and maybe not taking B12, or who knows, there was just that what was going on. And so she was able to, you know, hear me, because she knew that I also might have those reservations about medical advice, at least at that time. And she got her child treatment and really thanked me later, and it really made a huge difference for her and for her family. So a lot of stories like that, a lot of stories of moms with autistic kids, you know, calling me up literally in tears and thanking me for an article we published because they finally had something to show their family who distrusted or questioned them. And they said, look, you know, here it is, written, and it's real pretty, and, you know, it's true. So stories of those parents have kind of moved me the most, I think. And also just, you know, now that my kids are in their 20s and 30s, having them grow up and look back and appreciate the way I raised them. And I never did it so they grow up and, you know, appraise me or appreciate it. But my son, Finney, who's now in his mid-30s, was a river rafting guide for a while. And he would run into people who knew the magazine. Somehow they'd get to talking and, you know, he'd say who he was and they'd say, oh, we know Mothering. And so he heard from other people what a difference it had made for them. And he also really appreciated as he got out in the world. And I think my other kids did kind of some of the decisions I made. The fact that I think more than anything that we still really have a good relationship. I have a good relationship with them and they with me, even in adulthood. So the fact that we've had that I raised them in a what I hoped was a cooperative way rather than an authoritarian way. And then that really resulted in us having a good relationship as when they got into adulthood. And then I think the thing that I'm really excited about now is how the community of mothering has moved to the web. And, you know, I started out in print and that's all that I knew in those early days. But our young community of mothers has this whole great discussion forum going on mothering.com. We
we have something like 165,000 members discussing every single topic. You can get up in the middle of the night, you know, with your baby and know somebody is there that you could email and go, oh, my God, what are you doing about this?
15,000 responses later.
Yeah, exactly, and you're asleep, hopefully. But, you know, that excitement of moving to a whole new kind of venue there's more immediacy. You know, I can write a blog and get things going and stir stuff up real fast. And so I like a lot of the qualities of that, and I like kind of the adventure of finding new ways to communicate really the same information, you know, but just getting it out there to more parents and to young parents through, you know, a lot of people are using mobile phones now. You know, they're saying that that's going to be the biggest way people are going to get information in a few years. Everyone can afford a phone, you know. So.
And all that can be found at mothering.com. And
yeah, check out mothering.com and our discussion forums.
Lots
there's just a lot to offer.
Recipes, and you mentioned.
And then Peggy's Kitchen on mothering.com. And we also have a weekly newsletter of food recipes, so you can sign up for that online as well.
Yes, and the whole discussion on nutrition and how it affects, you know, even conditions like autism, super interesting.
Big discussion
more
that,
and more and
sure.
more proof that there's a link.
Yeah, for
between
sure.
nutrition deficiency. Peggy, we're almost out of time, but as a man, I do want to ask, what can we as men do to nourish mothers?
Oh, that's a really lovely question. I think really listen to the mothers. They often let them lead, you know, let them lead, especially in those early months with a baby. They really need support, and they need support to trust their own instincts, trust in them, and believe in them, I think, and praise them, because there's so much pressure in all sorts of different directions that it's hard for a mom to feel like she's doing a good job, even when she's doing a great job, you know?
And support would look like?
I think it would look like praise. It would look like specific praise to her. It would look like helping to realize that sometimes she can't ask for help and she might need you to see that she needs help when she's not able to ask for it or doesn't know it herself. Encouragement for her to get a nap. Maybe coming over to do stuff around the house to help her out, bringing in a meal to a new mom or a new family. And I think just again,
is there
telling her how she's that she's doing a good job.
Is there a male section on your mothering website where
where
fathers?
Places. Yes, there is. There are some discussions with dads and
how to
and
support
with
the new mom. If not, we should start that. I mean, I'm not a father, but I would love to help with that.
There are some conversations, but I think there aren't, you know, there could be more.
Yes.
And my son had and his wife had a baby 9 months ago, and I did some research about resources for dads. I actually have a blog about that with a lot of links.
Mark, maybe we should start a men's mothering group.
Totally, we should start some men's.
We'll get back to you on that one.
Yeah, Peggy on the next show.
Peggy O'Mara, the editor and owner of Mothering Magazine, calling from Santa Fe, New Mexico. Peggy, such a pleasure.
It was lovely, Helga. Thank
for
you.
All
Thank
your
you,
work.
Helga.
And we'll reconnect soon again.
Thanks. I hope so. Good luck
Thanks
to you.
For all your great work.
Thank you.
And that was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation on Mother's Day and mothering.
An Organic Conversation is a production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producer, Gina Rustani.
For our blogs, podcasts, and more information on this show and previous shows, please visit our website at anorganicconversation.com.
You can also follow us on iTunes, Facebook, and Twitter, and we'd love to hear from you. Please send us your comments and questions to share@anorganicconversation.com.
Coming up next is Beth Greer and Your Supernatural Life, a great show right after An Organic Conversation. So stay tuned. And again, for all websites related to today's shows, blogs, Facebook pages on mothering, there was lots of information. Go to anorganicconversation.com or on Facebook. Coming up soon, you'll find more and more recipes and resources for any new mom. Shout out to all moms. We're your hosts, Helge Hellberg.
And Mark Mulcahy.
And we'll be back right here, same place, same time next week. See you then, and thanks again for being part of An Organic Conversation.
Don't be a drag, just be a queen. Don't be a drag, just be a queen. Don't be a drag, just be a queen. Give yourself prudence and love your friends. Subway can rejoice your truth.